Hello, this is Mr. Sherwood, and I'm doing a mini-lecture for my dual-credit physical science class. This mini-lecture is on Chapter 15, entitled Place and Time. The text that we are using is An Introduction to Physical Science by Shipman, Wilson, and Todd, published by Houghton Mifflin, copyright 2006. You'll take note that this lecture is not part of the Northeast curriculum from Mr. Kimperly. Of course, we have a 1 year to do this course, and at Northeast Community College, they only have one semester. So Mr. Kimperly has given me the leeway to add additional materials to your course here at West Point. So with the housekeeping things out of the way, let's move on to Chapter 15. Remember to pause this lecture at any time that you'd like to look up information within the chapter to see how it correlates to what I'm telling you. The goals or objectives for this lecture include that the student will be able to describe our latitude and longitude system. You, as the student, will be able to give a general description of how you find your latitude and longitude, not using a GPS. You will be able to explain why we commonly link time and place together here on the Earth. You will be able to tell why it's been difficult to construct an accurate calendar through the ages. You will be able to describe what causes the seasons. And you'll be able to give a functional description of precession. Chapter 15 is divided into two kind of major areas to look at. Obviously, place and time. The two things are, we kind of think, inherently separated from each other. But as we're going to see later, they do have a link and are not as separated as we'd like to think they are. So, for the place part, locating place, I kind of trust that the geography classes that you've had have pretty well covered this, and so we're not going to go into too much detail in talking about locating a place on the Earth's surface. Just kind of as a reminder for terminology, our locating system here on the Earth is called a Cartesian coordinate system. I know, that's a math term. You know, it's the X and Y coordinates, all of that stuff that you hated in algebra for graphing and so forth. But it is how our mapping system has come about. The geographers adopted and used the X and Y Cartesian coordinate system, but they labeled it latitude and longitude instead of X and Y. By using this system of longitude, like we'd use the math's y-axis, with plus and minus comparable to east and west, and latitudes, like you would count from the math's x-axis, again using plus and minus synonymous with north and south, you could locate places on the Earth just like you did in algebra with paired numbers. Oh, lovely! The part that becomes really confusing is the fact that our regular idea of this Cartesian coordinate system is that it's on a flat surface. And obviously the Earth is a ball, not a flat surface. Our x-axis lines then, of course, become our parallels of latitude, and our y-axis lines are, of course, those curved lines of longitude. This results in kind of a strange situation where the y-axis intersects the Earth's x-axis twice. That would mean that we've got two origins. Earth's main origin, the one that we think about as the zero point from math, is where our prime meridian, which goes through Greenwich, England, intersects the equator, which of course is going around the middle of the Earth. The prime meridian going through Greenwich, England was selected, of course, because at the time they came up with this idea, England was the major power in the world. And because they were all powerful, or at least they thought they were, they were able to make the rules, and we're kind of stuck with those today. The hard part of this system is, again, that ball part. If we start moving west on the equator, eventually we come back to the point we started, but approaching it from the east. This is the point where we somehow are connecting place with time. The term international date line suggests both a place, you know, it's a line, and time. Oh, a date. That seems to be when. Since the beginning of the year, we have been using time as a fundamental quantity. It's fundamental because it's one of the most basic quantities or properties that we think of. We used it when we were measuring speed, when we were measuring acceleration, when we were doing all of those physics topics. But when it comes right down to it, what is time? It may be a fundamental quantity, but what is it? I pulled out some past history. It says, our description from chapter 1 was that time is continuous. It's a forward flow of events. Marcus Aurelius, the Roman emperor and philosopher, wrote, time is a sort of river of passing events and is strong in its current. St. Augustine pondered the question too. He said, what then is time? If no one asks me, I know. If I want to explain it to a questioner, I do not know. Events are intimately associated with time. Without events, there would be no perceived time. We have no innate awareness of time, only an awareness of events taking place in time. As such, events mark locations in time and time intervals, analogous to the marks on a meter stick indicating lengths of intervals. Hence, events allow us to measure time, and periodic events allow us the definition of a particular time interval. We also say that time occurs only in one direction, forward or ongoing. How do we know this? Because we've never seen any physical events occur backwards to us. You know, other than maybe running a movie backwards for fun. Although the concept of time may be difficult to comprehend, the existence of time, as we know it, is related to change. Also, time and space, then, are linked together, with time somewhat considered as a fourth dimension. If something exists in space, it also must exist in time. When we study astronomy, black holes, and deep space, we'll come back to this philosophical part of time and explore it a lot deeper. It's really going to be fun. But for now, what we want to do is kind of finish up some of the things that your text offers to you about time and place. And I thought it was really interesting that they went through a discussion describing to you how you can locate your position on the Earth, latitude and longitude wise, using time and a sextant. In this day of GPS locations, the sextant is an instrument that's probably being phased out and its use will be lost to time. But I do know that in the Navy, people that wish to go be captains on ships have to learn how to use a sextant to determine their location. We have an excellent diagram of a sextant found on 413 of your text. You'll notice that it has a telescope, a pair of mirrors, what looks like a protractor on the bottom. To determine your latitude and longitude with a sextant, you also need two other pieces of equipment, a table of sun altitudes and dates, and a very accurate clock. First, to determine your latitude, you would shoot the altitude of the sun with your sextant, pointing the sun at the crosshairs in the telescope, and then reading the protractor part down at the bottom to determine at what altitude the sun was. By subtracting this from 90 degrees, you should be able to get your latitude if you have a table to look up to see what the altitude of the sun should be on that particular date. By looking at that particular date with the altitude that you've been given from your sextant, you could determine your actual latitude. Another shortcut method might be wait till midnight, and if you're in the northern hemisphere, shoot the altitude of Polaris, the North Star, and from that you can also determine your latitude. I know, don't bother to look for the Polaris shooting in your book. It's not in there, and I don't know why. Next, you would have to have a very accurate clock. This clock would be set to Greenwich Mean Time, in other words, the time that it was at Greenwich, England. You could compare the Greenwich Mean Time with your current time, and knowing that the Earth rotates through 15 degrees per hour, you could calculate the number of degrees east or west of the prime meridian that you were, thus giving you your longitude. This is all explained in detail on pages 412 through 416 of your text. The last section of your chapter is entitled The Seasons and the Calendar. The seasons part, I hope you pretty well have a handle on. It was covered quite extensively in 8th grade earth science, and I taught some of you that 8th grade earth science, so I'm sure you probably have it. But just as a reminder, the earth is tilted at 23.5 degrees. When that tilt results in the northern hemisphere being pointed towards the sun and the southern hemisphere being pointed away, we in the northern hemisphere have summer. And when the reverse is true, in other words, the southern hemisphere is tilted towards the sun and the northern hemisphere is tilted away from the sun, we are having winter. Halfway between each of those, we have the equinoxes, where the sun is striking directly on the equator and neither hemisphere is getting more or less sun. As far as the calendar goes, we've been fighting with calendars since, the first calendar came in around 3000 BC. This calendar was based upon the positions of the moon and the sun, and it was thought that the universe must be perfect. So the sun and the moon and the day all have to be related to each other in some perfect way. Today we know that the earth is a ball going around the sun and the moon is a ball going around the earth, and they all have their own motions, and their motions don't have anything to do with the motions of anything else. So since we have to use days and years that really are not related to each other by their motions to build a calendar, we've had to come up with some really unique arrangements to make those calendars work out. We started, like I said, back in the 3000 BCs, and that first calendar was actually based on the movement of the moon. Because it takes approximately 30 days for the moon to go through a complete cycle, and it takes approximately 12 cycles to make 1 year, they decided to make it that way. 30 days, 12 months, 360 days. Of course, today we know it's 365 and a quarter days for the earth to get all the way around the sun. And so every year their calendar got off by another 5 days. That Babylonian calendar, though, started things off for figuring out how long does it really take to get around the sun. The calendar that we use today is an adaptation of the Julian calendar, which was brought in at about 45 BC during the reign of Julius Caesar. This calendar has 365 days in a year, and it also includes a leap year and every year divisible by four. That extra day being added to make up because we know it really takes 365 and a quarter days for the Earth to orbit the Sun. And in 45 BC, they had been able to figure that out as well. So what adaptation of the Julian calendar are we really using? Well, it's the calendar from Pope Gregory the 13th. In 1582, Pope Gregory the 13th had noted that the Julian calendar was getting out of sync with the actual days. The reason it was out of sync was that the real time it takes for the Earth to go around the Sun is 365.2422 days, not 365.25 days. So in the centuries between 45 BC and 1582, the calendar had gotten off by a total of about 10 days. It was about 10 days too long. So Pope Gregory stripped 10 days out of the calendar, jumped everything around, and decreed that leap year would be observed every 4 years as it had been before, except on years that were divisible by 400. So any year that was divisible by 400 would not be a leap year. This would kind of eliminate three leap years out of every century, and it made the calendar accurate to one day in 3,300 years. Pretty good for the 1500s, don't you think? A final little piece on calendars. You've probably noticed that the designation of the years using BC and AD, for example, 300 BC and AD 450 and so forth, the BC stands for before Christ, and the AD stands for Anno Domini, or in the year of our Lord. That is, the years are designated as being before or after the birth of Christ. The Gregorian calendar is sometimes called the Christian calendar. However, sometimes new designations are used. For example, 300 BCE and 450 CE, which stands for before the common era, is identical to BC. The CE stands for Common Era and corresponds to AD. Common Era then refers to the most commonly used calendar system, the Gregorian calendar. But do remember, there are other cultures that have calendars as well, such as the Chinese calendar and the Muslim calendar. So we don't have an exclusive rights to the calendar. There is one other motion that we need to bring up that the Earth does. It's not really related to its time, but this motion is called precession. If you've ever spun a top and watched this top spinning on the ground, you'll notice that the top of the top seems to kind of go through its own circular motion. This circular motion is called precession, and the Earth's 23.5 degree tilt goes through precession. In other words, it slowly wobbles around. So the Earth as a spinning top does wobble. It takes about 25,800 years to make one complete wobble, all one complete circle. So I'm not thinking that we're going to see much change in our lifespan, but this 25,800 year wobble could account for some things that we do know about, things like ice ages. To wrap this up, we kind of want to look at an idea of locating some sort of object and thinking about the different dimensions and Cartesian coordinates and things that we have to do to locate an object. So if we could, we're going to imagine somebody's nose. In the classroom there, in my room, we have somebody sitting there in the classroom. We'll take you, for example. I know there's more of you, more than one of you, but we'll take you. If we used the door as our starting place, we can think about walking in a certain number of paces directly in. Let's pretend that's latitude. We could then follow the tiles on the floor for perpendicular lines, turn and walk a certain number of paces to you. Then, measuring from the floor up to your nose, we would get a certain altitude, and we could say, we have located you three-dimensionally. You're this many paces straight in from the door, this many paces at a right angle to the door, and this many meters or inches above the floor. The question would then be, have we accurately located you? I would maintain that the answer to that question is no. Well, why not? You happen to be sitting in my room right now, but an hour from now, I don't expect you to still be sitting there. So we have to bring in what was already discussed as being a fourth dimension, time. So now we come in a certain distance from the door, we come out then a certain distance from the wall, we come up a certain distance from the floor, we found your nose at this particular point in time. Oh, do we see how time and space get linked together? To accurately represent the position of any object in space, we need all four dimensions: length, width, height, and time, because we know things move about. At this time, I know now it becomes a pun, doesn't it? At this time, we're at the end of the chapter. You'll take note of the questions that are there, the review kinds of questions that are at the end of the chapter, and as always, the answers are there as well, so that you can check your understanding and see if you have fully comprehended some of the things that we've talked about in this mini little lecture. Thank you for listening.